Daddy, what are you doing?
We're recording a podcast.
Who's listening?
Islander fans are listening.
Where are they?
Well, they're right here.
Welcome to the Isles Faithful Podcast with your host, Michael Sherline.
Welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Sherline. Today is Thursday, October 11th, and we're going to catch you back up. This is episode 10. Yes, number 10 already. Thank you for the continued support. You guys make this fun, exciting. I love hearing from you. Hopefully, next episode, we can get a bunch of callers in like I've been trying to do. That would just be amazing. I love hearing from all you guys on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else. This week, we spoke to Rob Taub of the Isles blog, and he's also a Stan Fischler intern. We go over a whole bunch of different things. Now, we spoke over the weekend, so some stuff has changed since then. Namely, let's see, a Robin Lehner 4-0 shutout. How amazing is that? I'm shocked. I really was expecting him to play solid. I wasn't expecting a shutout. Good on him. There's been some other mental health stuff come out over the last couple of days, so that's also good to see. We also saw Jan Kovach go away. They put him on unconditional waivers yesterday, and nobody picked him up today. So whether or not he'll be bought out remains to be seen. It hasn't been announced yet, but generally that's what happens once a player is placed on unconditional waivers. So it's either another NHL team's going to pick him up, give him a shot, or he's going to head back to the KHL. So, Jan, we hardly knew ye. Unfortunately, we didn't give you enough time to see what you really had. But again, the professionals in charge clearly didn't see enough. So that's a discussion for another episode. Now, back to Robin Lehner. How awesome was that? He just had the team blocking shots in front of him, allowing him to see all the shots unchallenged. The penalty kill was amazing. 0-for-8 on the season against power plays, you know, or penalty kills, I should say. So that's another awesome stat. It just seems everybody is doing good things, and you know, I can't wait to see what we do, what we get out of the next start from him. I definitely I picked him up in fantasy in both of the leagues that I'm in, to be honest with you. As a third goaltender, I like to pick up somebody and use them as a streamer. And he was a low-risk type of guy. And, you know, I had a shutout in the first game with him. So that was definitely a positive there. Now, some other stuff as we move forward into this upcoming week. We're going to be on a really long road trip. We're going to go through California. We're going to go visit Nashville again. All these teams that, you know, we should be struggling against per everybody else's analysis. So it should be interesting to see what happens here moving forward. We're going to go through that gauntlet of California. That's going to be some tough hockey, and especially tough being a fan here, you know, on the East Coast, trying to stay up late. I know I usually do my best, but wind up falling asleep on the couch. So, you know, that's part of the life of someone who gets up at 4:30 in the morning, I guess. But that's neither here nor there, and you don't want to hear about my complaints because I don't really have many. So, here we go. Now, Rob and I, like I mentioned previously, we did record this on Saturday over the weekend. That was prior to the loss in Nashville. It was post the season opener win in Carolina, and it was also prior to Monday's matinee 4-0 shutout. So like I said, some things have changed since then, but it was an overall good discussion, and we'll take you right into that. Let us know what you think. All right. Welcome back to the Isles Faithful Podcast. Joining me today is Rob Taub. You may know him or you may not know him from Twitter. rtaub_. Rob, how's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Just waiting a few hours, and be heading out to the Barclays Center for the home opener. Actually going to watch Devils and Oilers, and probably gift the game. And we'll just hang out for the rest of the day.
Nice. Why don't you tell us where you write? We were just talking about it, but there's so many different titles, I would probably butcher them.
So yeah, I contribute to Isles Blog, whether it's blogging or gifing games or just trying to put stuff out there, whether it's fan stuff or team stuff. I'm also a Fischler hockey correspondent. I did the Islanders for a little bit. I still do the Islanders. I did the Rangers for a little bit. And right now I'm going to be a full season credential for the Devils this year. So basically what I do is I get in after the game, get interviews or talk to the broadcasters about the teams. And yeah, just I'm basically a contributor. I've been doing it for a few years now and help contribute to the MSG blogs that Stan does and also contribute to his Islander pieces on the team website.
Very good. I never really had the chance to work with Stan all that much. I do have a few stories, obviously, being around the locker room and speaking to him and just watching the Maven work is amazing. And I was fortunate enough to see him in action before he retired for a bunch of years. So that's a great thing for you. And like we were talking about prior to recording, I hope it works out for you personally.
I hope so, too. I mean, this is my fourth year with him, and it's always been a blast, whether it's been good or bad. Great stories, great insight from him, and you know, he just loves to talk hockey. How can you not be happy being an intern for a guy like that, who you just want to talk about your favorite sport, talk about the teams, talk about what's right, what's wrong, what should be done. It's basically a dream type of internship if you're a hockey guy.
Sounds like, I mean, you're going to learn from the best firsthand, even if you're not really working with him, in person day to day. I'm sure you communicate with him all the time. Now we'll go right into our favorite sport and the team that we both cover in the New York Islanders. What did you think of game one the other night?
I was actually not as upset as many people were with the performance. They're learning a new system and it's not going to, be a one-trick pony. It's going to take a little bit to learn, but I like that they were tighter defensively. I think they looked more aware defensively. Did they allow 46 shots? Yes, but they let Greiss see everything. You look at it last year where weight system, they would be where Greiss or Halak, who departed, couldn't really see the pucks coming toward them. So now, giving the goalies a chance to see pucks, they're going to make the stops. And that's, I think, what Trotz wants in the system. Offensively, I thought they could have done a little bit better. I think they're a little bit hesitant because they're on their toes playing in their zone a lot. But I think they were very opportune with their chances. They, like the Filppula goal, you didn't see that coming. Like the goals at the timely goals. And if they do that for the remainder of the season, they're going to win more games than people think.
I think that's a very interesting point about letting the goaltenders see shots, because I felt like as much as, yeah, there was over 40 shots on goal, a lot of them were from areas where, low danger. I don't really know the whole percentage on,
I think low danger is kind of the top at the point, and high danger is more in the slot and by the sides of the net.
Yes.
I'm not totally sure. That's just my thinking.
I also noticed they prevented a whole bunch of the cross crease passes that plagued them last year. It seemed like all year they were, those east-west goals from getting the goaltender to slide from one post to the other, and these little stupid backdoor plays that, weren't really evident. The defense forced everybody to the outside, which is what you want. They also prevented them from really doing much in the crease area. By the time Carolina would get into the zone, they were below the goal line, and not much is going to happen from below the goal line, especially when you have now the center coming back and helping out, and they're that swing man where they're going from one side to the other, and they'll peel off, go to the front. It seemed like structurally there was way better,
You didn't have three guys down below the goal line chasing like you did last year. And I got to give props to the penalty kill. I thought they were fantastic on on Thursday, and Greiss was, you know, your goalie has to be your best penalty killer. That's the old saying in hockey. Your goalie has to be your best penalty killer, and he was. But I thought even with the penalty kill, you saw that they were aggressive. You saw guys putting their sticks down, blocking shots. You know, Johnny Boychuk's probably blocking a shot right now, getting hurt, even though the game hasn't started yet. But, you know, it's the little things like that where they're going to be improved. It might take some time where they finally, you know, really, really get it. But there are improvements. And even though it's one game, I could see the same thing happening tonight where you have a much more high-octane team and a better team that's going to pressure them both offensively and defensively.
I love what I saw on the penalty kill. You know, it's unfortunate that they scored the tying goal. I believe it was on their power play, correct? Off of
no, Stahl's, it was a butt.
Was it even it strength?
It was goalie was pulled.
All right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So it seemed like it was basically like a power play. Yeah, because they had an extra attacker.
I should have got the shutout. And my thing was, I watched that play again, and if Pellick just clears the. They just need to, when they're down, when it's 6-on-5, and I even noticed this last year, because they would, you know, give up goals like under a minute to go in the game for teams to tie games. They don't clear the puck down the ice. They don't shoot it hard enough. Like, you watch that clearing attempt, it was a very soft clearing attempt, and that's what led to the goal. If they learn to just chip it off the glass or even throw it down, take the icing and take another shot without trying to win the game without even being down 6-on-5, they're going to win more games like that. They just can't. They got to make harder plays. They didn't make enough hard plays last year. And that one play going with Pellick where he couldn't clear. It's got to be a harder play. It's a harder play that game. The Islanders probably get the shutout.
You know, but that's going to come with time. We brought that up, you know, prior to recording, and there are new systems that we both referenced, and it's going to take everybody some time to. You know, adjust and make sure they're doing what's required and asked of them. So when we get past the nerves and we get past the new shininess and scariness of Barry Trotz being the head coach, because I'm sure that they're all like, whoa, what's all this professional stuff here?
You can hear it in the way the players talk about it, that this ain't no Doug Waite system anymore. This is going to be structured. It's going to be the top type of system that this team needs to play if they're going to have success in the future.
Yes, exactly.
Even Matt Barzal, who I thought was a little bit skittish on Thursday, but he's also learning a new system. And I think he's going to be the key to this new system because he's the guy now, and he's the number one center. He's going to have to learn to play that two-way game, which he showed last year, but more on offensively. But I think defensively, he's going to be a great player down the line this year.
Yes. What do you think about goaltending here moving forward? I mean, Greiss is going to get the start again today for the second straight game. I'm curious to see what Leonard is going to bring. There's such a feel-good story there that I just want him to succeed. And all reports on Twitter today from Andrew Gross and Arthur Staple and I think even Compton say that, you know, Leonard still has some stuff to work on that he's aware of, and he wants to be 100% ready when called upon. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think with the goaltending, I think it's going to be feast or famine because you have a guy in Leonard, and I wrote about this. He's the youngest goaltender the team has had since Rick DiPietro, since the 07-08 season. So he's still a young guy. He's going to have to learn, and I know it is a feel-good story. Reading that piece was extremely hard, I think, for a lot of people, including me. I think now that he's got a real goalie coach in Mitch Korn, who's really going to work with him, it's going to take some time. And you know, I understand where Trotz is coming from, where he said that Greiss has been a little bit more prepared. And I also think that goes with Greiss was here last year, and I think he knows the adjustments that he needs to work on. I think Greco and Korn both know what to do, what makes him tick and what will make him a great goaltender. So it's a little bit of feast or famine. I want to see Leonard, him in a regular season game. I think maybe we'll see him. Hopefully, probably in a back-to-back situation, maybe 2 weeks from now when they're in LA and Anaheim. I think that's maybe when we'll see his first start, if not maybe earlier. But I think he's going to be good once he gets his head on straight. And I think once Korn really, really starts to put in the work with him, I know they have. It's been training camp is one thing, but during the regular season, it's not four or five goaltenders, you know, like in training camp in the mornings. now when there's a game day, it's just you and the goaltending coach or you and the goaltending director. So I'm very interested to see how it works out between the both of them. If Greiss can turn back the clock to his performance for a year and a half going back a few years ago, then he's going to be a good goaltender. Then the Islanders will be a slightly above average team, and they'll surprise some people because Greiss is 32 years old, and he's not getting any younger. And the contract he signed, while many still disagree that it was not, it's bad right now, but it was the right move at the time. If he lives up to that contract this year, then all is worth it. And if he's the starter, okay. If he's not, I think they have a pretty, you know, sustainable 1-2 punch in net. And I think they can win some games if they just get timely stops like they got on Thursday. And they both these guys have confidence. I think confidence is the biggest thing that I think Korn needs to instill in these guys. Definitely Greiss, because his year last year was horrific. But with Leonard, I think he's never really had that camaraderie as a goaltender with his goaltending coach. So I'm very interested to see what happens.
I am too. And, you know, you bring up great points with the goaltending coaches and the director of goaltending and Mitch Korn and also Piero Greco. Now, I read last week that, you know, Greiss had hired his old personal trainer back over the summer to work with him. And, you know, I think it was Elliot Friedman who actually had the report in his 31 Thoughts that Greiss is a monster. If you look at him, it seems like this year he's in the best shape he's ever been in on top of that. And if you don't remember, there was a little bit of drama over the summer last year with Greiss potentially getting hurt while mountain biking or something. It was kind of kept under wraps.
I was not aware of that. I did read the Friedman piece with him talking about he is a monster. He's a big goaltender. I mean, you look at a guy like that and you think, okay, this guy should be able to stop pucks all the time. And I understand he's been a backup. He was a backup. He's been a career backup. But if he has confidence like he did a few years back, he can, you know, play with the best of them. I'm not saying he's like in the Rene or the Hellebuck or even the Lundqvist conversation when Lundqvist was at his best. But he could be a very solid goaltender that can give you a great effort when you need it.
You don't need to have a world-class goaltender because that's a luxury a lot of teams don't have. What you need is a couple of guys who you can rotate in and maybe even split the workload that are going to be serviceable NHL goaltenders who are going to give you a slight chance to win every night, you know?
Kind of like what Holtby and Grubauer were last year to the Caps.
Exactly. Now, nobody really also has the ability to have coaches work with them like the quality of coaches that Lou Lamoriello brought in, you know, because of Barry Trotz and his relationships with some of his associates here. So I like what I saw out of Greiss the other night. He definitely looked solid, like we already spoke about, and I'm happy that he's going to be going again tonight. I think that with the high-powered offense from Nashville, I definitely want the better of the two, or the most ready of the two that, you know, they said. So we'll see what happens there. See, and
Nashville, and this is just my opinion, I wouldn't say they're top-heavy. I think they're just more balanced. They're very balanced. Like, I saw that they're going to have Fiala on the fourth line tonight, and Fiala killed the Islanders last year when he was here. So that just tells you they're, instead of really being top heavy, they're just a very balanced forward group. That's just my take on it.
They have a great defensive core too. So
best in the league by far.
I mean, Subban's hurt still, right?
I am not sure. I think he's going to play tonight. I didn't see him get hurt on Thursday, but even a guy like him, he makes that team. He's that personality, kind of what we wished a little bit what John Tavares was to the Islanders. I know Subban was traded and he had a chip on his shoulder. I'm not saying Tavares didn't have a chip on his shoulder, but I don't think the Islanders have had a guy like a PK Subban type person in a long time. And I think they're going to get that with Matt Barzal a little bit once he matures a little bit and grows into his own. But I think the Islanders have missed someone like that who really, you know, brings out the personality in the locker room.
I agree there, and I spoke about that with Mark Parrish the other day. You have a character guy like Barzal, and he's just fun, and fans can rally around him and his personality, because he's one of the youngest players in the league, you know, him and Bolivier, and the chemistry of those two. Mark and I also spoke about how you can't teach that. You know, they were friends through Team Canada prior to them even becoming Islanders, and now they're on the same team, on the same line, so you've got that prior chemistry with them, and that's just awesome that they're going to be able to ride shotgun with each other moving forward.
I totally agree.
Now, defensively, you know, obviously there's been some drama around the Islanders with Devin Taves and him potentially being the first call up there. And, you know, what's your opinion on him starting the season in Bridgeport? Because I know for me personally, he hadn't played a game, a solid 20-minute game that he's used to since he went down with his shoulder injury last year. So I want to see him get the time that he needs to build back up his confidence and be ready. I thought he looked great in camp, but I don't think he was really ready to jump into the NHL and play the minutes that are going to be expected of him just yet.
I can't say I wasn't disappointed when I saw that he was going to be sent down. It seemed like the tea leaves were reading the day before that, all right, it sounds like he's going to be gone. But I think I understand I understand what you're saying with that, the 20 minutes and he hasn't, but in the preseason, he looked NHL caliber and he looked NHL ready. And how I see it, before Garsneau left, other than Barzal, that guy was the crown jewel of the Islanders development, of the Islanders system. Because you heard nothing but great things about him from his time in Quinnipiac all the way up to Bridgeport last year until he got hurt. So, yes, I'm disappointed that he's not here. Do I think he's going to be here soon enough? Absolutely. If one of these guys, whether it's Spezza or Mayfield or Pellick, struggle, I think Taves is going to immediately get the call. And I think he would change the dynamic of the Islander defense. Yes, he would have to learn the new system too. But I looked at him in the preseason, and he just looked calm, comfortable. He looked like a guy who you can depend on, you know, to play 17, 18 minutes a night or even more than that. And I just think if he gets minutes now playing in Bridgeport, perfectly fine with that. If the Islanders struggle defensively, like everyone think they're going to, you bring him up, I think it actually can change. It could be a different dynamic, and I think it could be a better way for them to adjust defensively with a guy who can play a two-way game, because you have guys like Boychuk, who's his body's breaking down. Letty's a more offensive defenseman. Hickey, he could be on and off. And then you've got Pellick and Mayfield, who are still developing, even at 24, 25 years old. And then you have a guy like Taves, who can, you know, he could shift what people will think about the team if he's brought up here.
100% there. I think that he is going to be like a more skilled version of Nick Leddy, if that makes any kind of sense.
He looked like he's very precise with the puck. He knows where to put the shots. He knows where to find guys. You don't find those guys a lot.
No, you don't. Absolutely. He was definitely a steal when they drafted him. Now, you brought up Hickey, and I know that he gets a lot of flack on Twitter.
I know a lot of people who give him a lot of flack on Twitter.
You have a coach in Barry Trotz that has gushed about Hickey when he was the coach of the Capitals. And then one of the first players he singled out when he signed with the Islanders was Thomas Hickey, especially with that contract, because he is the type of guy who's a little underrated, who you may get on him for his defensive play, but he is a very fast skater.
He's very serviceable,
correct. I think he handles the puck well enough, you know, to be a mainstay on the Islanders' defensive core. And as he showed the other night, you know, he can get into those spots and he'll be able to score goals like he did in preseason. And he is our overtime hero. He's always going to be our overtime hero.
I think with Hickey, and I think this has always been the underlying factor, it's the size. A guy of his, and frankly, he's actually not that small. If you look at him on skates, he looks small compared to some of these. And I think a lot of times the past few years, he's taken a beating. He really is taking a beating. He's taking his licks, but he just keeps going. And I think where the whole Trotz factor comes in, you got to remember, he was the captain of Canada in the World Juniors before he was drafted by LA, fourth overall. So he knows a bit about being a leader. And I think Trotz kind of realized that when he first got here. And I think he wanted that type of leadership and to reverberate around the room. Because with a guy like Hickey, you know, he's small, but he's got a big presence. And I heard he's a big voice in that room. He might not wear an A, or if anything, if he could have wore the C, if they didn't give it to Lee or they wanted to wait another year. I think that's why they brought him back, because he's a leader type of guy. He might not, you know, he might not be the loudest, like the loudest in how he plays, but he plays the game right. And I think a lot of people get on him because they see a guy like him who's been here a number of years now, and they've seen the good and the bad, but there's always someone to blame. When the team is losing, and Hickey could take the brunt of it because he's the guy. Everyone knows about his leadership, but everyone knows that when he plays really well, he's very noticeable. And when he's not playing well, he's just getting overran by the bigger, stronger players he's going against.
But you know what? Size doesn't really necessarily mean much in the league anymore.
Right now, but go back to when they signed him. And as he started to really make himself noticed on this team, up until even before the whole defensive debacle, I mean, you could see where he was a very solid defender, but there were nights where you could look at a guy like him and the team is losing and you want to find a guy who wants to be a scapegoat. People are going to look at him because they see that name. They see a guy like him and the way he plays, and he's getting run over by defensemen a lot because of his small stature. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20. People are going to, make their decision to think like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, then I like to look at the whole defensive situation as a whole, too, because you go back a couple of seasons, for all intents and purposes, the defensive core of this team hasn't changed all that much. We've lost Calvin DeHaan, you know, but you had some players move on to, like, Lubomir Vyšnovský and Martinek, who seems to have come and gone several times over the course of the last decade. But
Dennis Seidenberg
as well. And he was serviceable. I had no problem with him, just besides the fact that he was getting a little older. He was here just to give them some more experience on the back end. But
I think what happened with him last year was he was not that kind of system that Doug Weight liked to play. It just left him for dead.
And that's my point. You know, the system that was here wasn't really that much of a defensive system.
Capuano's system was defensive.
Right. So Capuano's system, there was a system there, believe it or not, as much as people didn't really want to admit that. He just didn't really adapt to in-game changes when, you know, a team would start to utilize the trap, clog the neutral zone. You know, it didn't ever seem like he had much of a counter. You know, it was either it was going to work, and it was going to work the whole game, or the second there was any kind of adversity or an adjustment by the opposing coach, the Islanders would just get stymied and be stapled to the boards, and they would chip it in, and they wouldn't even get to the puck first. And then when you have Doug Weight, you know, the first 6 months or the last, you know, bunch of games under Doug Weight when Capuano was fired, you had guys rallying around him, and he installed this system of, you know, the weird thing you see on the power play of them, you know, basically passing the puck back into the defensive zone, and you're going to have the speed coming through the neutral zone and, you know, all that other stuff.
Can I just say, every time I saw that last year, I was cringing because that drop pass, it just, you're asking for bad things to happen. Because if the team can't get in the zone in the first place and you're trying to be fancy like that with the speed, you're just wasting your time and you're wasting your power play.
Absolutely. You know, and then you've got, I've seen it a couple of times now over the last couple of preseason games, and even the other night in Carolina, it was like the same thing. It was like almost like they were reverting back only because it was another option for themselves. And I still cringed, but at the same time, okay, a lane change. So, all right, who's going to be the next open guy? It's going to be the late guy coming out of the zone. So let's pass back only to reset. It wasn't that they were just doing that the whole entire time.
The only guy that they should pass it back for is Barzal, because Barzal seems like he can get in the zone any which way possible, even if he has to take on four guys. He just seems to have that nature about him where he's so determined to get the puck deep in the zone, or even just try and start a rush, and then he uses his legs and just starts a play. The one thing I noticed about the power play, and I really want this year, because their power play was top six in the league then the season. They got to just let Ryan Pulock just grip it and rip it. Use him like Ovechkin, and you're going to see it's going to pay dividends. It really is. I'm not a huge fan of Letty being on the top pair. I understand why he is there. I really thought that Ryan Pulock should be the power play quarterback. I think that's the future if the team wants to be good special teams-wise.
I think we're going to get to that point, though. Like we said earlier, you know, everything is being – they're feeling it out, seeing what's there. The puck was literally dropped, you know, 48 hours ago for the Islanders. So,
and the ice was terrible. According to Matt Patel, the ice was
– It looked terrible. It looked like worse than the worst Barclays ice there ever was. That's what the way that it looked.
That's cutting it, but I'll agree with you.
All right, now to close, you know, what do you think the record's going to be here? I mean, I know you said earlier you didn't think they were going to make the playoffs, but I think they're going to surprise a lot of people with the goaltending and if they get the defense straightened out here moving forward. I think they could be a playoff team, maybe the wild card.
I said on another podcast that I did a few weeks back, I think they could hit 93 points if the system works, if they learn the system the right way, if the offense, if they get all four lines to contribute, and if they get the goaltending. But I also think the coaching, I think having Barry Trotz and a coach like him who's established and he has structure, he has a system, he has a way he wants his team to play, whether it's gritty, dirty, gritty, dirty style hockey, or even play the skill game or play with speed. I think they can hit 93 points if everything, you know, works the way it should and they don't get, you know, bombarded by injuries like they did last year. I'm in agreement with you. I think they're going to be a lot better than people think. I also think the Metro is not as great as some people are making it out to be. I think, yes, we saw the 7-6 game between the Penguins and the Caps. That was just fire wagon hockey. That was a typical Islander game last year. But I think those teams are going to see them have to adjust. The Rangers are going to be bad. Carolina, we saw on Thursday that they're young, they're fast, but you could still see that inexperience. You could really see that inexperience. And then you have teams like Columbus where if they don't get over the hump, they never will. And even teams in the Atlantic, other than the big four with Boston, Toronto, Tampa, and Florida, Buffalo is bad, Montreal is bad. The Islanders will have a chance if everything works in their favor to make the playoffs. I think 93 points, I don't know if it gets them to the playoffs, but I think that would be a pretty remarkable season, you know, based on how much turnover the team has gone through.
I agree there. And, you know, the first 20 games of the season are often the most important 20 games of the season, you know, especially leading up to American Thanksgiving. So
if the one other thing I want to add, this team has this team has low expectations. So when a team has low expectations, take a team like the Devils last year or Colorado or Vegas, because everyone likes to reference Vegas, and they could surprise. They really can. I think teams are going to overlook them. I don't think every team's going to overlook them, but they have a lot of guys on this team with a lot to prove now. And that's where in the summer, the guys that Lou brought in, I wrote about it a few days after free agency. I said, this is just phase one of the process. This is not going to be the team we're going to see in the same type of team in the next 2 or 3 years. We're going to see the youth movement's going to come, but I like this team this team has a chip on its shoulder.
Exactly.
And when you have a team with a chip on its shoulder, they've got something to play for. I think the past few years, there was a little bit of, what's the word, Mike, if you could help me, entitlement. I think in the last few years, after they made the playoffs, those 2 years in a row, I think the entitlement set in that, okay, we could just go through the regular season, play like garbage sometimes, and then turn it on when we need to. It's not like that anymore in the NHL. And I don't think it's like that anymore for this franchise. This franchise, they're turning a corner now. They have, like Chris Botta said, there are adults in charge now. There's not a private country club type atmosphere. This team has, there's accountability already bursting through the seams. You could see it with the way Trotz was in his post game, where he basically said, we suck, but we're going to get better. I like that. I loved hearing that. When was the last time? Yes. Did Waite kind of say that later? But he didn't say it with reverence like Trotz did.
No, he would say it like, this could potentially be the last time that I'm ever an NHL coach. So.
And he would grin about it. I feel like he had that entitlement too.
You know, but you're going to take on the identity of your coach. You know, you're either going to be, you know, and Waite was a great player. And I felt like
there's a difference between a player and a coach.
Right. He's got potential because he's got that moxie and that hockey mind. I just think that he was thrust into a situation where he wasn't really ready for.
I think he was also trying to be too friendly with the players.
Exactly. There's a point where you're a player's coach, and there's a point where you're just a friend. And I think he was kind of always teetering on the level of both. But, you know, moving forward, like to your point, they do have a chip on their shoulder. Everybody's got a chip on their shoulder. Their old captain is gone. They have a new captain. They have a new coach. They have a new general manager. Everything about this team is trending upwards. So, yeah, your top six is still the same, and we don't know if Eberle is going to remain here. Hopefully Lee does now that they named him captain.
You don't make a guy captain.
No.
And let him leave 6 months later.
So
it just doesn't make any sense.
Nope, it doesn't. You look at all these things, including even Leonard and Greiss. Greiss has something to prove from last year to show that, you know, the previous year was not a fluke.
I'll give you the three guys with the most to prove on this team this year. And I know it's only been one game, but Robin Leonard, because he's playing for – this is his career on the line right now. I know he's only 27, but you look at where he is right now and what he's coming back from, his career is at a total
crossroads.
Thank you. Brock Nelson, because listen, if he's not the guy this year, get him out, then he's done here. There's no need to have him anymore when you have guys in the system and other players who can play better than he can and show up every night. And my number one guy, and I'm gonna catch a lot of flack for this, it's Andrew Ladd. He was brought here to be one of the guys, and did he show it in the second half of the first year? Yes, but that's when he was fully healthy. I feel like he's never been fully healthy other than that point. If the Islanders are going to do anything this year, it's on a guy like him, because he was a captain and he's won two Stanley Cups. What else kind of camaraderie do you need from a guy like him? He has to be a leader. He has to lead this year when he gets back in the lineup.
I'm besides myself with him, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, the contract got a lot of flack and everything. And
they weren't going to get a guy like him without offering money
No, and that's fine. You know, you had to do that. You had to. They didn't have a choice. A guy like that was available, and a lot of teams were going after him. And the fact that, you know, the optics of him coming here was big in and of itself, to be perfectly honest with you.
Because the Islanders didn't get big free agents like that.
No.
They wouldn't, and even the Jason Chimera signing, although it didn't work out, he was kind of one of those signings where it's like, all right, a guy wants to play here. He can come here. And if he has success, he has success. If he doesn't, let him, then he's off, you know, off the greener pastures.
Right. And now we don't know what injury Ladd is dealing with, but, you know,
it's his back. It's got to be his back.
That's what I thought, you know. But did that come from him fighting all those sturgeon?
I didn't get that reference.
To his big fishing stuff over the summer for his charity.
I don't think so. I think he's just, that back problem's been following him around since he got here. I think he's always been playing with that. It's been nagging him for a long time. Just like with Boychuk. Boychuk's never been healthy.
No.
I think he was the first year when he came here, but after that, I think he's never been fully, fully healthy.
You could even extend that down to Spezza, because Spezza was hurt last year in Vegas for almost the whole year. He battled through it, and then he missed a couple of games during the playoffs as well.
There's a lot of hate for Spezza. I get it. He did block Taves from making the team. And all right, you know, we'll get over it. If Taves gets up here, people will forget it. But Spezza was starting on the top pair for Vegas last year before he got hurt. So people need to remember that. I know the optics and the metrics. It wants to bring up analytics, and I hate analytics. I'm just going to say that right now. But I think with Spezza, what I saw on Thursday, we saw the good and the bad. But when he could be serviceable, he's not a terrible, terrible defenseman.
I didn't think he looked very bad at all. I thought he looked
better. The icing. Everyone points to the icing after they scored, after Carolina tied the game. What do you expect a guy to do in that situation? They're getting bull rushed in the zone. He's got to do something to get, you know, from making sure they don't score again.
Right, and you know what? I'm sure that he got screamed at from the bench to ice the puck. You have to relieve the pressure like that sometimes. There are times when icing is the best option for you, because guess what? You're gonna get stuck out there as a unit, and you may be a little tired because of the pressure, but it gives you 15 to 20 seconds to compose yourself, to stop that onslaught. Win the faceoff after the icing. Skate to the red line, dump the puck, get off, and get a change. That is hockey 101 right there.
That's another thing that's going to be key to this team this year is faceoffs. I know they weren't very good on Thursday, but in the preseason, they were actually really good faceoff-wise, except for a few guys. The Islanders have been plagued by not, they don't win enough draws the past few years. Cizikas has been their best center iceman when it comes to faceoffs, but guys like Nelson and Tavares, when he was still here, they were terrible at winning draws when they needed them the most, whether they were down a goal, down two goals in a tight game. They never won a big draw. This is something that Stan, he implanted in me. Every time we talked after when I was in his office with him, he would say, these guys don't win faceoffs. You don't win the faceoff, you're not going to get that, you know, it's momentum's going to shift.
Exactly. You're chasing 100% of the time when you don't win a draw. Because now that's possession for the opposition. And I know you don't like analytics, but possession is one of those things where, yep, you know, you can't argue with it.
You can't, but, you know, like Lou said, and people took this way too far or way too hard to heart, that when I tweeted that, he says that they're a tool, but you can't always trust them. No, and he's right.
He's right. He's 100% because he's that old school mentality, and I get it. But then you look at a guy like Trotz, who came out right after that and said, you know, you could have 100 shots on goal, you know, and he referenced Corsi and all that other stuff, you know, but
I hate that word. I hate Corsi. I hate Fenwick. Those two words bother the hell out of me.
Now, I had Reagan King on one of the first episodes, Course Isles, and I don't really know a whole heck of a lot of analytics. I could look at it and I could say, you know, all right, well, I could see where this would correlate to this and all that other stuff, but I'm not really a subscriber into it too much, but I wanted him to come on to kind of explain everything, and I thought he did a pretty good job there. So, I mean, we'll see what happens moving forward, and hopefully we can do this a couple more times here in the future, right?
We get to talk about the third jersey or Tavares.
Who?
Listen, I think people, as the year goes on, unless NHL.com shows every goddamn goal he scores, I think people are going to finally, you know, start to let it go. I've kind of let it go myself. I understand his decision. It happened. The team is 1-0 in the post-John Tavares, post-Pajama Boy era, whatever you want to call him. Let's just see where the team goes from here. Let's give it some time. I understand the when say hatred, but I understand the vitriol for him. But this is a new era, and I'm not one to say the Islands are going to be better off without him. But I think there were some aspects, and we pointed out to them early in the podcast, before we started the show, maybe the personality of the team just wasn't the right one with him.
No, I don't believe so either. He was, you know, we joked that he was the robot all the time, and
he was a company. He told the company line.
And now that he's in Toronto, it seems like his operating system got, you know, an upgrade where, you know, he's got personality 2.0 now. Amazing.
And one thing on the third jerseys, if you like him, you like him. If you don't, you don't. Let's see how they look on the ice first. But I got a close up look at them at the NHL store. They actually look really sharp. And the orange numbers really pop. I really like that.
I go with the line of thinking that everyone else was kind of saying on Twitter, and that they're just safe, you know. And I believe Greg Wyshynski had said the other day on SiriusXM that they were boring, you know. And yeah, all right,
we're boring.
They're kind of boring. I mean, because they're plain and simple. But you know what? Sometimes simple is good. And
would I have taken an orange jersey? Absolutely. I think that. But you know, people say, "Oh, you're going with orange. You're copying the Oilers." No, they're not. The Islanders were here first. I mean, but the point is, people want to call it safe. It's a very sharp. Let's see how it fully looks on the ice. I think people will like it. Listen, as long as it's not black, as long as it has none of the Brooklyn aspects to it, it's a win-win.
Players like them so far, for all intents and purposes. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, they're the guys who it's going to matter to pretty much the most on the ice. Not that a jersey will help people win games, you know, and it is all about money. Jerseys are about money at the bottom line. It makes fans go out there and make purchases and get excited about a product because, hey, look, there's T-shirts, there's hats, there's this, there's that. You know, and will I buy one? Probably, but I'm dumb, so.
I mean, listen, if my girlfriend wants to get me one, which she's talked about with me, I'm like, sure, whatever, I'll take it. I'm not going to say no. Well, why would I say no? It's a free jersey.
I have a closet full of jerseys. What's one more?
I mean, I have a jersey with my name on it for this year because I, funny story, when I was at the draft party, I was looking for a new jersey, and I found this one with a 54 on the back, and the guy gave it to me for $30. It's a $250 value jersey because it's a real one. I got it for $30 because it was on clearance, and there I was like, who's 54? And my dad called. He went to Stitches. I hope I'm not, you know, taking up to. Went to Stitches. The guy at Stitches said, okay, the Islanders told us to make like 6 of these for the preseason last year without a name. And I ended up getting like one of them. They're like, there was never a player's name on it. So I put my name on it because I don't know who's going to be 54 unless there was going to be Noah Dobson, which I would put his jersey, unless he gets traded, I would have put his name on the back. But like, that's my story where like, okay, if you find me at the Bark wearing that jersey or at the Coliseum, my name's on the back because no one else wears 54. And I don't think any Islander has ever worn 54.
Didn't Matt Donovan or somebody wear 54?
Matt Donovan wore 46.
46. There was a defenseman, one of the, from that.
Drew, was it Drew Fada?
Maybe. It was like a call up or someone.
What a name drop. Drew freaking right. Fada.
Well, since we're talking about jerseys, and we'll close off with this, one of the coolest ones that I have so far. Is a practice jersey that's autographed by Wade Dubowitz. It was Wade's practice jersey.
I love that.
I actually got it as one of those end of year season ticket holder things. It randomly showed up in the mail, and I was like, I couldn't even read the handwriting. I had to compare it to stuff online, and oh wow, hey, look at this. It's Dubowitz.
Look at it this way. I had, you know, since my dad's season ticket holder, and you know, the Islands were ingrained into my blood. First jersey I had was a Roman Hamrlick number 4 jersey, and then it turned into a Chris Osgood, then it went to Michael Pekka, then it turned into Rick DiPietro, and then it, you know, turned into Tavares, Letty, and now I'm at my name. So, you know, I've kept it pretty simple when it comes to getting one player and keeping that jersey for a while, but I think you look at some of those names and it's like, man, like I used to go with the flavor of the month.
I'll go run down the list of mine real quick too before we start to go too long. But
I had a Ryan Strome jersey. I'm not proud about that.
For whatever reason, I have a lot of defenseman jerseys, and maybe I'm always drawn to defense because I played defense in high school. I also played wing, but for the most part, my senior and sophomore years, I played defense. So I bought a Boychuk the first year in Brooklyn with the Brooklyn patch. Or was it the Coliseum with the Coliseum patch? One of those.
I had Coliseum.
I bought a Nielsen jersey, and then, you know, we didn't sign him.
Never had a Franz jersey. I thought about it.
I have a Chris Campoli.
I've been trying to reach out to Chris Campoli. He's hard to find.
I also have a orange third jersey, Miroslav Chatan.
I had a Chatan jersey. Those orange jerseys were very underrated. I don't know why people hated them. I understand maybe because it was the star.
Right.
I template, but those jerseys were fun to wear and the team looked good in them.
Yes, they did. And it was from a good period of time as well. I also have a Rick DiPietro autographed jersey that someone gave me. I have a couple of other jerseys.
Before I started going with the real stuff, going like back a few years when fake jerseys were the rage and they still are. I bought like a fake Travis Hamonic, fake Brock Nelson, fake John Tavares. I bought fake jerseys because they looked real. And then once you got them, you're like, damn, that's, you know, I mean, they were $30, so you couldn't beat that. But it's like, maybe it's time to go back to the.
Most of my jerseys were authentic ones from the team store when it used to be at Broadway Mall. And
I used to love that. Every time I used to go in there, I'm like. Yeah, first place I'm going was the Islander store, see if they have anything new.
It was crazy though, because I'm pretty sure that they sent all the jerseys out to that place, Stitches, to get done, so it would take them like a month to get them freaking done.
That's true.
But, all right, man, it's been good chatting.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we could touch base again a few games down the road to see, you know, we'll do like a little check-in to see what the progress is like and if our opinions changed at all, and thanks for coming on. Let everyone know where they can find your stuff again.
So you can find me @rtab_ on Twitter. Look out this week. Starting this week, I'm going to have for the whole season. This is going to be a whole full season thing. I'm going to have a player of the week spotlight, whether it's one or two players. And then I'm going to have a new thing called I'll Remember, where it's former Islanders, whether they played 1 year, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, talking about their time on Long Island and what it was like for them with the team.
All right, man. Sounds good. Really looking forward to it. You've been pumping out some great stuff over there. And
thank you.
Keep it up.
Yep. You too, man.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
All
right, that's going to wrap it up for episode 10 of the Isles Faithful podcast. I'm your host, as always, Mike Sherline. Drop us a like, a review, and a rating on iTunes if you can. It would help us out a lot. Also, follow us on Twitter, Faithful Isles. Follow us on Instagram, Isles Faithful. Follow us on Facebook, The Isles Faithful. And you can follow my personal Twitter account at Isles Blogger. Now, keep an eye out for an announcement on that Discord channel. We tried to do it over the weekend. Didn't really work out. Didn't have that many people interested. There was a couple, but with football and the three-day weekend, just not enough time. So if you can, let us know what time works for you. We'll use it to record, hopefully, an entire episode, and it'll just be me and a co-host and you guys just talking Isles hockey. So thanks for stopping by, and we will see you next episode.